Fixing hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, coming to you live from Tampa, Florida, where the ravages of Hurricane Elsa are not to really be seen here, as people are jogging with their dogs, and it seems pretty okay.
I'm Rick from CalicoCutPants.com.
I'm Sean Magnu from The Athletic. I didn't get that reference, but I'm pretty sure I know where it's from.
So, cards on the table. We're doing this show after a momentous occasion in Puck Soup Land, which is the release of the second season of I Think You Should Leave. I've seen the first three episodes. Ryan has seen the full run.
Twice.
Maybe more than once. Yeah. Sean has not seen them. He is saving them. So, we will probably do a more in-depth breakdown of this incredible moment. This moment that is like if you were listening to like Pod Save America and it's the day after the election, you're like, why aren't they talking about the election? I understand. I understand where this show is in the pantheon of how important this shit is to Puck Soup. This is like the top of the list, maybe. And like maybe this and Thanksgiving food. I don't know. But like, so like, I understand why we all want to talk about it. We will briefly mention that it's great. From what I've seen, at least.
Yeah, it's really good.
In vague terms, my favorite sketch is the courtroom sketch. If you've seen it, you know it.
Mine might be CalicoCutPants.com.
I have not gotten there yet. I think that's like episode 4 or 5,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, good point.
But I know the reference because I read some reviews. And I think at the end of the day, my reaction is twofold. One, and this is not a spoiler, Sean. They did a really great job of extending bits over multiple episodes in a way that I didn't expect. Like, there's a sketch that references the first sketch of the season, like, later in the season. And I'm just like, oh, okay. That circled back around. And the second thing is that, you know, what a joy. In a world of diminishing returns, in a world where almost every sequel is inferior to the original, where we herald The Empire Strikes Back because it at least came close to matching the quality of Star Wars, where we herald The Godfather Part 2 for being probably better than The Godfather, Aliens to Alien. Like, we have these very, very small examples of sequels that match up or beat the original.
Rise of Skywalker and The Last Jedi.
You bite your tongue. And so to have the satisfaction of knowing that the second season cleared the bar is like amazing.
Yeah,
do you agree, Ryan?
Yeah, it's a different wavelength. I feel like this season's a little darker, honestly. But yeah, I thought this was fucking incredible. And I appreciated it more on the second watch than the first, so.
Yeah, as you know, with most sketch comedy, it reveals itself the more you watch it, like a Terrence Malick film. So, there you go. So that's I Think You Should Leave. Everybody should watch the new season. It's great. And there you go. Get some safari flaps on your fedoras. So, we are again at the whim of the NHL schedule, more so the whim of the Montreal Canadiens. Winning fucking game 4.
That was weird.
And pushing this thing back. Very, you know,
guys,
very rude.
It's almost the middle of August. Let's fucking or July, I mean, fuck. Well, forget it.
No, you had a great joke. You shouldn't have corrected yourself.
It's not even a joke. Let's just get this fucking done. We already had a Stanley Cup final in October. What are we waiting for here? Four games.
But hold on, how great was that stat they gave for Hedman, the first player in NHL history? Was it to have a point in every month or some shit?
A goal like, in every season? Month, yeah.
Was it a goal in every month of the year? That's fantastic.
And if he had scored, I think it was like last June, maybe, or something like that, he would have, or no, it wasn't even that. It was like March. If he had scored last March, he would have had them all in like overall 12 months in the course of like 18 months or something like that.
That's incredible.
But you had to go back because he didn't score in March or whatever the month was. So you had to go back to like March 2019 and you were like, this fucking bum. He stinks.
I wish Pierre would have leaned into that and been like, you know, Doc and Eddie, I know Doc's not there. They realize this is the first save ever made in July. You know, just every time something happens in game one.
That's right. Yeah.
Just declare it's the first thing. It would have made it more likable. Anyways. All right. So it's the day of game five. By the time you hear this, it might all be over. Or Tampa's mayor will have completely fucked her team by predicting that they could lose to Montreal and then come home and win the cup in front of their home fans. Sean, your thoughts when you heard about this elected official angering the hockey gods?
Yeah, not great. But honestly, was she saying anything that a lot of Tampa fans may not have been thinking? I mean, it's a weird situation, right? Like, they won the cup last year, but no fans in the building, no loved ones around. I mean, they did get kind of the parade treatment a little bit when they got home, but
yeah,
really not any of the usual trappings of winning a championship. I'm sure they would love to win it at home, and that's what should happen. This is tonight, game five. This is the game where everybody is like, yeah, this is where Tampa closes it out. Home ice, crowds going crazy,
stand on their throats. Absolutely,
this is it. So, and I think that's probably what's going to happen. I think the series probably ends tonight. But if it doesn't, either because, you know, maybe Tampa comes out tight, maybe it's, you know, whatever, or maybe Montreal just does one of those Montreal things and has one of those Montreal games, and you're late in the second period and Montreal's up 1-0 and you're like, oh no, is this really going to... Montreal wins tonight, look out. Because now we're into, all right, this, like, the Undertaker has sat up, and this might go a little bit longer. So it's going to be a pretty fascinating game tonight. I'm really interested to see how it turns out. I suspect it's going to go the way we all think it is, but, I mean, anyone who's been listening to me all playoffs knows when I say it's probably, I'm talking, like, yeah, 60% chance, and then...
Ooh.
If not, who knows? We go into the weird zone at that point.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Do you think that Montreal can win this series, Ryan?
I mean, there's a whatever 2% chance that they can win the series, but they would need everything, absolutely everything, to break their way. You know, it's funny because I said... I think after it was like after the first period, and I think it was scoreless, that I was like, ooh, this really feels like the kind of game where they're going to, you know, put 42 shots on net. They're going to hit the post 5 times and they're not going to win. And that's pretty much what I mean. They didn't put that many shots on goal and they did score twice. But it was like, yeah, no, they hit the post, I think, 3 or 4 times and lost. And, you know, obviously once they didn't score on that power play, you were like, there is absolutely, you don't get a 4-minute power play at the end of regulation and the start of overtime and look that fucking bad and then still win the game.
Has there ever been a power play that looked good after the break for intermission? Like, it seems, I've been watching hockey my entire life. I could count on one hand the number of times a team scores on the power play if the power play spans 2 periods.
Yeah. Somebody asked the question earlier, might have been like Justin Bourne or somebody like that, was like, does this ever fucking work out?
And, right. Never does.
And somebody said, you know, no, like they, you know, whoever, however many years ago, went back and looked at the stats and was like, yeah, the odds that you score at the top of the following period are extremely low in comparison with, you know, because even a good power play only works like 22% of the time. But apparently the number just drops off a cliff if it's over the course of the two periods. So, but with that having been said, you still expect Tampa to put the fucking puck in the net on 3 minutes of power
play. You kind of do. Yeah. I mean, they are like an incredible. Watching their power, the first power play they had in game four was like fucking poetry. Just like the way they move the puck, the way Kucherov distributes the puck, the way they have like three or four different set plays they try on every power play. It's fucking gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's just great.
Going across the box hasn't really been working for them that much. Like to that guy in the middle of the box.
Yeah, it's
that
sort of,
has not the, been the working.
I don't know if the Lightning sort of innovated that move, but the team that always used to do that was the Capitals would set up Oshie in the slot as sort of the second option to the Ovi shot, and it was pretty good to have that sort of, instead of, you know, traditionally you would always have the guy kind of screening the goalie, but instead they kind of moved him out into the slot and really fucked around with teams. But
well, I mean, you have to respect the Ovechkin shot a lot more than you do the Stamkos shot at this point.
Well, you mean in the sense that Ovechkin gets it on net? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A little bit. It's pretty good. Yeah, the Lightning. We'll see how it goes down. But I don't know. I feel like maybe this would be a different series if Montreal had fucked around with their lines in game three versus like doing what they always do in the playoffs, which is like waiting one game further than they should.
Yeah, but the circumstances with Ducharme coming back, that would have made it a little bit tough, right? I mean, if they lose two under Luke Richardson and then he comes back and it's like, yeah, I'm changing everything, it looks a little strange. Not that that's a reason not to do it and you're in the Stanley Cup final, but I can kind of get why they maybe waited.
Well, there's also, excuse me, the whole deal with like, doesn't Ducharme just love scratching his really good young players?
Yeah.
Just like, oh, yeah.
Because then he gets to put them in and then
and look like a genius. Yeah.
He looks so, you're like,
yeah, and look
wow,
like a genius.
This guy thought of putting Cole Caulfield in. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So, congratulations to Kokonemi when he comes back tonight and scores the winning goal.
Do you think they give him the Rick bonus? Do you think they give him the job?
Of course they're going to give him the job. He got him the stand. Greg, they're extending Mark Bergevin based on this. They were going to fire him, but then they made it to the cup final, and they're going to lose in five games probably. But, you know, they're like, instead, he's got it absolutely figured out. Retroactively, every trade, every signing he's ever made, perfect. It's actually all going to work out great. So why wouldn't they say this is the coach, especially because, as we know, they self-limit their coaching opportunity. Or
I don't know. I guess I'm just bitter. I'm just bitter because, like, I feel like Claude Julien, he's doing this like the same shit Claude Julien did, right down to like scratching young players.
Yeah,
like, it's
and
the
like
same fucking playbook,
12% worse. Right? Like, let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they will. Like, why not? Right?
Yeah,
I mean.
Well, I mean, I have a good reason why not, but they don't want to hear about it.
Right. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see if, you know, as again, you're going to hear this show probably after game five. So you're either going to be like, oh boy, can't wait to hear what they have to say about game six. Or, all right, good thing this whole thing's over and everybody can party with the cup and trim their playoff beards. Speaking of trimming beards, today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Manscaped.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Olympics are coming, major championships are coming, Stanley Cup playoffs are in action, baseball is going on all summer. You know what isn't in this summer, boys? A wild and hairy bush. You could take care of your downstairs with Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Their fourth-generation performance package includes the brand-new Lawnmower 4.0. Can you follow the Lawnmower 4.0 without having seen Lawnmower 3.1? I don't know. If an athlete treats their body like royalty, why not treat your pubes like Olympic gold? Fellas, do right by your balls and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code PUCK20. That's PUCK20. Now, it's a very sensitive area, just much like this is a very sensitive ad read. And you want the best equipment for the job. The Lawnmower 4.0, boys. Did I mention it has a 7,000 RPM motor and a new multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock? And it gives you the ability to turn the 4,000K LED spotlight on and off when needed, so you can kind of like get a good look at what's going on down there. But the package also comes with a weed whacker to chop your worst weeds up top in both your nose and your ear. So now you got the downstairs covered and the upstairs covered. Very exciting times. Get 20% off of free shipping with code PUCK20 at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with code PUCK20 at manscaped.com. Go there and look at the variety of products they offer that perhaps we can't capture in a, you know, minute and a half ad read. Manscaped.com, PUCK20. This is great. Achieve pubic glory this year with Manscaped, guys. Guys?
Yeah, what's up?
Guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking. Okay. We're good.
We're here.
All right. We're going to ease into some sad news for a little bit, because it's impossible to talk about the week in hockey without talking about the incredibly sad and tragic accidental death of Matias Kivlinex, goalie for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and tragically lost his life in a fireworks accident this week. It's just one of those stories that just like came out and leaves you shook. Fucking 24 years old. Just sad shit. What was your reaction when you heard about this, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's tragic and awful, and when it comes out of nowhere like that, it's pretty stunning when you first see the reports, and then as some of the details have come out, it's just an awful situation all the way around. Obviously, you know, that not just him and his family, but the teammates there, the coach, the family. It's just such a bizarre set of circumstances, and like you said, we have to talk about it because it's one of the biggest stories in the hockey world. But also, I'm not even really sure what we can say beyond just that it's absolutely terrible, and just one of those reminders that you never know what the next day is going to bring.
Yeah. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, pretty much all that. Like, it was the first thing I saw when I woke up yesterday morning. Yesterday, right? It was stunning. Like, who would have ever guessed? And, I don't know what else there is to say. Like, it's shocking, and it's really fucking sad. The idea of, like, you know, he's 24 years old. He has his whole life and career in front of him. He's getting closer to living the dream that all these guys have had for, you know, their entire lives, basically. And then it's like, yeah, nope, not, doesn't work out that way sometimes. Like, just, you know, shocking, you know. You look at all the statistics about, oh, yeah, well, you know, fireworks kill and maim this many people. There was the NFL player a few years ago whose name I don't remember, who like had part of his hand blown off by a firework, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, I mean, this is just, I guess, what can happen to anybody around fireworks. Like, there's all these statistics that come out every year, and sometimes like a person who is quote-unquote a statistic as someone you are aware of more than in the abstract. And, you know,
it was really stunning because, like, well, first of all, the stunning part is that it happened at a house that belongs to his goaltending coach, Manny Legacy, and that it sounds like, you know, Elvis Merzlikens was there, and like, it's just even more crushing to think about like teammates and coaches and stuff being witness to all this stuff. But it, you know, like the way the story developed was also really interesting, in the sense that like when it was first reported, it was reported, I think, by the police that he like slipped getting out of a hot tub and fall and hit his head. And then like later on, it becomes, no, he was hit in the chest by a firework. And you're just like, holy shit. That is just, it's just, it just, just fucking wrecks you that something like that could happen. But some really lovely things were said. Guys like Nick Foligno, you know, made statements, and obviously Jarmo Kekäläinen put out a statement on Twitter of just sort of expressing his grief and talking about, you know, hug your loved ones a little bit tighter and stuff like that. And just, I don't know, it was really jarring to have to get back in, you know, wee hockey world after hearing about something like this.
Yeah.
It's tough stuff.
That press release, it was like, I get why this happened, obviously, but the thing at the end where it was like, this was his GAA last year. Did you see that at the bottom of that press release?
No, I didn't. Well, like on from the Jackets, was it? Or from the NHL?
Was just like, oof, maybe edit that.
Maybe don't. Yeah. That's tough stuff. Slightly happier news. Jonathan Toews made his return since the last time we did a show. He put out a video, which I understand the timing of it for a lot of people was a little bit hinky, because it was right in the aftermath of, you know, Bettman being asked about the Blackhawks sexual assault scandal, and, you know, the pressure being built up on the team, and local columnists now writing about it. And then Toews put out this video, but you know, everything I've heard is that it's unrelated. But he announced his return to the ice. He plans on playing next year, and he said he kind of let us in on his the condition he's been fighting. I'm looking for the name of it in this story that I wrote, and I can't remember the name of it. Oh, chronic immune response syndrome. Which was his immune system was reacting to everything that he did, any kind of stress, anything that I would do through the day, there was just always some kind of stress response. And so that's what it was, the diagnosis of why he felt so drained and lethargic and shitty, and why he decided to skip out on this season. But he's apparently ready to rock and roll again for the Blackhawks next year, which is good to see. I like Jonathan Toews a lot.
Yeah,
Did he say he had COVID as part of that? Did I read that right?
Yeah, so that was the other interesting thing, too. So he did a sit-down with Mark Lazarus with The Athletic, and he did a whole discussion with Laz about COVID and contracting it and, you know, dealing with it, and also believing that there may be something to what he went through being part of the, you know, long COVID thing that a lot of people have dealt with. But it was interesting that he said he left that out of his initial announcement that he was back, because he didn't want it to distract from anything. Like, he didn't want that to be the headline, he said, was that he had COVID and that maybe this has something related to what he went through. But yeah, you're right. It was sort of weird that wasn't, I mean, I understand why he's saying it, like, in a way, but in a way it was kind of weird because that very well could be part of this, you know, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. And it's a weird situation. I know some people have expressed some skepticism because, you know, the condition he's talking about, the chronic immune
response,
some people have said, you know, that's not a thing. And that's so, you know, what else is going on here? And I don't frankly think that matters. I mean, the story here is that he's coming back. And that was no sure thing. And, you know, over the course of this, for him being out, and, you know, there were, I'm sure everyone's at some point heard rumors about what he might have been dealing with, and, you know, some of the stuff, you know, very serious stuff that, based on what he's saying, had no basis at all in reality. And that's great. It's the good news is, you know, whatever he's telling us, I'm sure is an honest reflection of whatever he was hearing from his medical team. And beyond that, I don't think the rest of us need to get a complete blow-by-blow report on whatever the process was like. It's the good news is that whatever he has been dealing with and maybe even is continuing to deal with is something that he, at this point, feels confident he can come back from. He's going to resume his career. That's the main thing. And that's as you say, it's a good news story, and the rest of it, let's not let it overshadow the fact that it's a positive.
Honestly, if he came out and said, I didn't want to have to play through a bummer of a season with a shitty team, I would have been fine with that too. Who cares?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Like, if you're not into it, you're not into it. And come back when you are.
Well, yeah, like, but I mean, it sounds like it was a lot more than that. Like, his description where it's, you know, but that's also part of it is, you know, this whole, like, oh, why is he's telling us this thing? And I went into WebMD and I typed it in and I didn't get many. Yeah, well, you know what? This guy's been playing hockey for
oh god, really?
20 years. This guy's been playing, like, highly competitive hockey. Like, he might just be worn out. Like, the rest of us can't necessarily comprehend what that does to your body. And
he sort of referenced that. Like, he sort of said, you know, that, like, exactly. he didn't realize how much he had done to his body during that time. Yeah. So,
yeah. And you don't, I think I would assume, and obviously I'm guessing here, but I would assume it may even be the sort of thing where you don't even notice it happening as it's happening, because we all get one life, and he's sitting there going, I guess maybe this is just it. Maybe you just feel tired and crappy all the time. And then, you know, it's only later that he realizes, oh, wait, no, it seems like other people don't feel this way all the time. Maybe I should talk to someone or do something or take some time off and get back. And good for him for doing it, because God knows the hockey player mentality is always you got to fight through everything and you just got to just grit your teeth and keep going. And he sounds like did absolutely the right thing by not doing that.
Is there a thing on the internet that's both the greatest and worst thing that's ever been invented more than WebMD? Like, WebMD serves a purpose, which is in a pinch you can find out what might be ailing you, but also is horrible because in a pinch you can find out what is ailing you.
Yeah, right. And everything's like, oh, you... Yeah, I mean, it could be the common cold, or it could be the Black Plague, and we just don't know.
Right,
and
call a
doctor. And it's like, well, I could have called the doctor this whole time. Why'd I go to this fucking website?
Right. I either ate too much garlic or it's pancreatic cancer. Like, one of those two things could be happening to me right now. That's and it's just like, it's rough. Especially if you have older parents. It's rough. Gregory, I think I might have rickets. Oh, no, Mom. You probably don't have rickets. Get off of WebMD. Go to a doctor. The other Blackhawks-related news is Duncan Keith, apparently on the trade block, apparently looking to move on to the Pacific Northwest or parts there close thereof. And apparently zeroing in on him, based on the amount of chatter being generated by our friends in the Edmonton media, the Oilers.
Chatter is a good way to put it. Astroturfing is a different way. consent manufacturing. You know,
manufacturing is a great term. Oh my god, that's a great term. I love that term.
Yeah, they're working overtime up there to make sure everybody knows. Actually, this guy who has been fucking terrible for like 4 years, he's really good actually. And besides, it's more about getting rings in the room and knowing how to win. Than actually being any good at hockey. So that's just something for you, the Edmonton fan base to think about.
I think there's always like tiers of where you can go with the rings in the room thing. Like, in theory, you'd like somebody in their prime who won a Stanley Cup. Like, that'd be the first tier. The second tier would be, you know, somebody who's like on that Justin Williams tier of being like a really good secondary player that can contribute and do big things for you in the playoffs. Like, that's the next tier. And then the third tier is, this guy's just on our fourth line, and if we need to turn to somebody in the locker room at some point during a seven-game series, maybe he can say something interesting.
That's like the Pat Maroon tier. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Right, exactly. And I feel like Duncan Keith at this, in this level of his life, is in the Pat Maroon tier, but they're going to put him as a second, like a second pairing defenseman.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the problem is he makes $5.5 million a year against the cap. Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
Like, Pat Maroon, when he signed in Tampa, he was like, oh, I'll take, like, the league minimum, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, here's the thing with Duncan Keith, and you're right. I mean, we assume if he goes to Edmonton, it's going to be for half the salary, right? Like, do we assume that Chicago is going to have to retain to make that happen? I imagine.
Think, right? I mean they fundamentally have to if they're going to be able to like re-sign Adam Larson and do some of the other things that they're looking to do.
Let's say it's half. I mean, we can put aside whether he can still play anywhere near the minutes and the role that they'd be looking to have him play, and put aside what they're going to have to give up to get him. Because I think you can make a good case that at this point in his career, he should be a freebie at this point.
Yeah, fourth round.
You're taking half his salary off of you, and yeah. But I will say this, just to get to Greg's point on the guys with rings, if you're going to bring a guy in to that room where you've got Connor McDavid and Leandro Seidel, two amazing players but haven't won a ton in the NHL, if you subscribe to this thinking that they have to potentially learn it from others, I do like that. Putting aside the other concerns, you're bringing in a Duncan Keith and not a Pat Maroon, because what's a Pat Maroon going to teach Connor McDavid about being a superstar in the NHL playoffs and being the guy on a Stanley Cup winner and being the guy who's getting the most ice time, the guy whose reputation is going to go up or down based on what happens in the series, the guy who's in front of the media all the time? There's not a lot of guys in the NHL who are going to come available that have been that level of star. And, you know, Duncan Keith, okay, he wasn't a Connor McDavid Hart Trophy runaway guy, but this was a guy who was winning Norris Trophies, won the Conn Smythe, a legitimate top 100 of all time superstar in the NHL. I don't mind bringing a guy like that in and being like, you know, maybe Connor and Leon can learn something from somebody who has had success and won the rings with the brightest spotlight, and not just somebody who was a backup goalie or a fourth liner who's like, oh yeah, I seem to remember that, you know, this is what we talked about in the room. And Connor McDavid's sitting there going, dude, you played 8 minutes a night. What do you have to teach me?
So the thing with Duncan Keith is, obviously, like I said, the last few seasons, I don't know, two, three, maybe even four, he's been like actively not just not good, but like he's been actively bad. But with that having been said, that's also because Chicago was like, well, I mean, he's Duncan Keith. We need to play him 24, 25 minutes a night. And it's like, right. But like, you could, like, he's 38. This guy is my age. No, I feel like shit all the time, physically. Right. Yeah. And it's like, you could just like dial it down to like even 20 minutes. Maybe you get something more out of him, you know? And I, you know, at that point you're still paying whatever, $2.75 million if they retain half the salary for a guy who's going to be like your number five or six defenseman, which isn't ideal, but like, does the idea that he has nothing left to contribute, like, I don't know. I can see a world where if they put him in a position where he doesn't have to carry around whoever, whatever, like, bum the Chicago organization has put next to him. I can see where that makes sense. But with that having been said, like, I also look at the left side of Edmonton's defense and go, they would 100% put him on the second pair and play him 22 minutes a night.
They could do that. Right. I don't know. I'm just looking at
Like, Darnell Nurse is their, obviously their number one left side defenseman. That's fine. But I don't know that there's a number two there that you go, yeah, you can talk Duncan Keith into this, like, I don't know. Is fucking William Lagesson, like, is he a left side defenseman? Like, oh yeah, Lagesson's going to play ahead of you, Duncan Keith, the guy who has Conn Smythe and Norris and three Stanley Cups. I think that's a tough sell, and if that's the case, I don't personally do this trade, but that's not to say, I guess, that if they put him in a position to succeed, he could succeed.
My favorite current hockey conspiracy theory goes a little something like this. The Blackhawks trade Duncan Keith to the Edmonton Oilers for Caleb Jones as a pot sweetener to acquire Seth Jones in a trade from the Blue Jackets.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that he'll want to come there and he'll want to sign there because his brother's there. Love it. Love it. It's the Niedermeyer playbook.
Yep. That's
whoever
the
signs
thing.
Rob.
It worked one
yeah,
time.
Yeah, get Scott. Yeah.
And hey, I mean, what NHL brothers don't end up playing together at some point? I mean, it's
right.
Kind of ridiculous.
I mean, fucking Luke Hughes is already working the refs to make sure the Devils draft him. Did you see those quotes yesterday?
Exactly. Skip the middleman. Why do the why wait a few years for it to happen? Yeah. So it that
he's,
seems
he's
to
like
be a
he's
thing.
Like a. I want to play for the Devils. They have the best arena and the best fans. I'm like, all right, you could calm down a little bit there.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Basically, that was him going, please don't draft me, Vancouver. Please don't draft me, Jim Vancouver.
That's – I love that. I don't know where Jones – I mean, smart money seems to be on Jones ending up with the Flyers, but I kind of love that theory of him ending up with the Blackhawks as they orchestrate a Caleb Jones trade for Duncan Keith.
It makes sense, but yeah, I don't know. I was just looking at the Duncan Keith cap friendly, and he's on one of those backdiving deals. So I mean, maybe if you're Edmonton, you're sitting there going, you know what? It's two more years, but if he's terrible in year one, maybe he doesn't even come back in year two. I was looking. Does he fall under the cap recapture rule? Was he one of those guys?
I believe he would. Yeah, because
so, yeah, he had to. Yeah, I mean, he's got
so
one
I'm
of
wondering
them contracts.
If that's because I mean that's yeah. I'd want to see that, but. Because that if he does want to go from Chicago, and it sounds like they're willing to move him, but that's even almost extra leverage, right? If he's like, yeah, I guess I'll just retire and hit you with some ridiculous cap hit that should never exist because the NHL screwed up its own rule. But
you anyways, know what? I would know. Say that I feel like Chicago had earned it with the whole
that's,
Hossa.
That he, might like, be true. Yeah.
You know what? Like maybe not so much the Canucks because they did it once. For like a Hall of Fame goalie, I get it. Oh, but like for right, Chicago right. And Detroit, right. I guess to a lesser extent, it was kind of like
fool me once, shame on.
That's right.
And
yeah.
By the way, here, I gotta say, I respect the hell out of Vancouver fans still being furious about that. Like you can't even make passing reference to anything salary cap related without some Canucks fan showing up and being mad about that. And it's
yeah,
and I respect
Jay it. Beagle's contract.
Yeah, right. Well, exactly. Like, you know, some you can say Nikita Kucherov salary cap and some Canuck fan shows up and is like, you know what? You know what's really dumb about the salary cap? And you're like, oh, that's God, right. Here. If we could only figure out a way to get like a cap recapture penalty on Mark Messier's contract, that would be the
that's the antidote.
That would be the, like Vancouver would be like, we don't want to be in the NHL anymore.
There would be legitimate anarchists coming across the bridge trying to burn down the arena.
Exactly.
I mean, still wearing Trevor Linden jerseys, but you know,
yeah,
exactly.
Sure. But yeah, I don't hate the Oilers going after Duncan Keith because I do think that rings are important. Wouldn't you say,
yeah,
Craig?
It does. Well, I mean, the other thing is, and I know I just stepped on an ad transition, right? I know I just stepped on an ad transition, and you know, that's fine. But the other thing to say is, it feels like this is the Oilers like have found some obscure part of the CBA that's like, we have to make one extremely dumbass trade, or signing every single summer. Look, what do you want us to do? The league will take away our draft picks if we don't fucking do this.
Yeah.
And the local media is just like, this is actually one of the smartest trades I could possibly – like, I can't believe it keeps fucking happening. And everybody's like, yeah, he's actually doing a great job up there. First it was Chiarelli, now it's Ken Holland. And it's like, yeah, you don't have to talk yourself into this every summer, guys. Like, I can't fucking believe it's happening again.
You know, it truly was an amazing ad transition. I just want to point that out.
It was literally an attempt at the first ever assisted ad transition.
I'm literally sitting here like fucking steaming. I'm like giving Ryan the finger through phone.
Like, here's
speaking
what
of the finger, today's episode of Fuck Soup is sponsored by Manly Vans.
I don't think it's the same finger, but all right.
Yeah. I can't fucking believe Ryan. Ryan almost stepped on a second ad transition in a row. Like, I don't even know what the hat trick could be because I only have two ad reads on the show.
I'll say this, both of them, you know, how was I supposed to see Sean, the first one ever, coming?
Yeah, that's true.
This is like the first time they ever completed a forward pass. And it was
Greg, doesn't it almost feel like Ryan has taken a vow to break all our ad transitions?
Well, Sean, everybody cheers. Hooray, you did it again.
Ryan was like the Canadiens defense watching Ryan McDonagh make that blind backhand pass to Yanni Gore to Barclay Goodrow. They're like, I didn't know that guy could do that. They're just stunned. All right, Manly Bands is here to rescue you from an otherwise hellish band buying experience. We've talked about Manly Bands many times on the show. It is a wedding ring company that makes wedding rings for you, the dude. And they're really fascinating. If you go to manlybands.com, you can peruse their collection. And they've got incredible inventive materials that make these rings out of. We're talking gold, obviously. Wood, huh? Antler, okay. Steel. Dinosaur bone. Meteorites? It's incredible. They also have curated collections like the Jack Daniel's Whiskey Barrel collection. They've got sports-oriented ones. They've got a bunch of really incredible, inventive wedding rings for the guy that just wants something a little bit out of the norm. To get started, you order the Manly Ring Sizer from Manly Bands to ensure that your ring will fit perfectly during work and play. Once you know your size, then it's time for the fun part. Manly Bands has an insane selection of materials to choose from. Once you've selected your band, Manly Bands offers free shipping worldwide and a 30-day exchange policy and a free warranty. So, you know, if you don't like it, now you get some options. While there may be a 50% chance of your marriage working out, there's a 100% chance that you're going to love your band. So order your Manly Band and get 21% off. Plus a free silicone ring, go to manlybands.com/puck, manleybands.com/puck. That's manlybands.com/puck for 21% off. Manly Bands, the best damn rings, period. Well, the Olympics would disagree, I'm sure. I want to do this Conn Smythe ranking thing. It's more like a review of Conn Smythe winners. But before we get to that, any thoughts on, Sean, specifically to you, any thoughts on Ron McLean pooching the interview with Bettman?
Yep. I'm glad you mentioned that because I was going to try to squeeze that in. If people down in the States didn't see it, every year in the Stanley Cup Final, Gary Bettman shows up to do an interview with Ron McLean. They have famously at times been contentious, not so much recently. He did the interview this week. And on Monday's game, and did not ask about the Blackhawks situation with the abuse scandal, even though that is an ongoing story, even though that was asked about multiple times during Bettman's press conference. Ron McLean did not even bring it up during Bettman's appearance, and that led immediately to a lot of speculation, obviously. Sportsnet is a rights holder that maybe they were told not to ask about it, or that there was some sort of pressure put on Ron McLean. He says no. There were multiple media reached out to him, and he basically said that he chose not to ask the question because he felt like the NHL had addressed it as much as they were going to, and that he was just going to get a non-answer from Bettman, which he almost certainly would have, but it still has to be asked. I have a lot of time for Ron McLean. I've grown up watching Ron McLean. I think he, like anyone who's been on TV long enough, he comes in for a certain amount of crap that maybe he doesn't deserve, and also some that he probably does. I like Ron McLean a lot. There's no excuse for this one. He screwed up. There is absolutely no way you can have Gary Bettman on live TV and not ask him about the biggest ongoing behind-the-scenes story in all of hockey right now. Just a really inexcusable miss by a guy who should have known much, much better.
Did you watch the interview, Ryan?
I did not watch the interview. I feel like I get what goes on here, where, you know, he's like, oh, you think the refs and Department of Player Safety, you think they do a great job, right, Gary? And it's like, that's right, I do, Ron.
But see, that the thing is, it's usually not that.
No, like, I know.
McLean is one of the guys that will actually – that's why it gets awkward sometimes, because Gary Bettman really doesn't like being pushed on anything and usually isn't. And McLean has sometimes been one of the guys who will do that.
I think McLean was at his best when it was labor issues. Like he would sit down with Bettman, and there would be like, you know, the impending doom of a work stoppage, and he'd fucking get the Wolverine claws out, you know, on Bettman when it came to holding him accountable for those types of things. And I was Sean's right. Like, for those who maybe don't have the context, like, go on YouTube and find yourself some Ron McLean, Gary Bettman interviews where they would sit shoulder to shoulder in that little room, right? And then, like, and it'd be contentious and wonderful. And McLean was
Bettman
one of the
would
few
be
guys
grabbing
get,
him and stuff. Like,
it
was,
oh,
like,
God, yeah.
If you like seeing Gary Bettman uncomfortable, those are, I mean, there's definitely some awkwardness to them.
But, oh, yeah.
Yeah, like Gary Bettman, this idea that Bettman is this polished PR guy. No, but Bettman has a polished PR answer for everything, but if you push back on him, he will often crumble pretty quickly, and McLean managed to get that to happen.
He really
did. I mean, to the point where there was a lot of suggestion when McLean was removed as host of Hockey Night Canada for a few years, that may have come at the NHL's urging, that, you know, did Gary Bettman knife this guy because he was tired of being made to look bad. Like, there, it was a whole thing. So I don't know. Like, I saw somebody on the Monday before the interview saying, like, you know, on Twitter saying, oh, you know, McLean better ask him about the Blackhawks. And I came this close to replying to them going, don't even worry about it. There is no chance that Ron McLean is going to not bring this up. Now, I'm not expecting that Ron McLean was going to uncover some huge angle and get Gary Bettman to admit that he
knew all
along.
Rolls out. Yeah.
Yeah, but at some point, like, even just getting him to give the same BS answer, get him on the record doing it. And it was just – and it was one of those things where, you know, Ron McLean, part of his shtick is he does these little kind of folksy asides and starts talking about random stuff. And that's – when he's good, that's part of the package and part of the appeal. But when you've got a limited time – and they also shortened the interview this year. It was only like 5 or 6 minutes – when you have limited time and you're not asking the big question and you're rambling on about some nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
That's just infuriating to people because you can't even say we ran out of time. There was time. He just I actually take him at his word that he just chose not to do it. In his judgment, he at least in the moment chose not to, but it was the wrong choice, and there's no defending it.
Like, three things on that real quick. One, if your justification for not asking about it is that he expected Bettman to give a non-answer, then don't have an interview at all because you're just going to get non-answers on everything. Yep. I mean, like, you know this by now. The second thing is, I agree with Sean. Like, the most infuriating thing about this interview was that it was so brief, and a good portion of the interview was, like, him talking about the late Jim Gregory. and holding up like a picture of Jim. Like, it was just like, make the good choice here. Like, don't go down the Canadian folksy road for half your interview. It fucking infuriated me. And then the third thing is that, like, it's your job to come up with new questions about a controversial situation. Like, yeah, they were asked about it five times during the State of the NHL address, and they, you know, dodged the questions as deftly as they could. But there's other unanswered questions. I mean, the idea that a team had this happen and the NHL wasn't really made aware of it at the time, according to their timeline, is like a huge fucking deal. You know, if we're to believe their story of the events. So, I don't know. I don't buy the whole idea of like, oh, this is well-trodden territory. We're not going to get anything out of it, because it's your job to get more out of it if you're on McLean.
Yeah. And I will say, though, the thing that Ken Campbell wrote about it, like, people were mad at Ken for saying it, because he mostly defended Ron McLean, which he shouldn't have done. But the question of, oh, yeah, that's something a journalist would do. Do you think Ron McLean's a journalist? And it's like, at this point, not really. You know, like, that. I think that's a pretty good point, that, like, in his role now, he hasn't been that guy, like, the guy who's going to put the screws to Gary Bettman for a while now. And, mm-hmm. like, this has been, I don't think this is telling tales out of school. This has been a tough postseason for him. There have been a number of Ron McLean-related controversies. And, you know, I don't get to watch him every single night because I'm in the U.S., so maybe he's doing a mostly great job and I'm only seeing the bad stuff. But it seems like there's been a lot of bad stuff this year. And I don't know what goes on with that. Like, that, you know, I have no idea why that would be the case or why it wouldn't be. But it seems like it keeps coming up, and isn't that interesting?
Ryan, should we talk about your newfound love of Ken Campbell, a.k.a. Hockey's Bulworth?
He turned it on, man. Like, the hockey news let him go, and he's like, I'm coming out of the corner like fucking Mike Tyson in 1982. He's just throwing fucking haymakers. It rocks. It's cool. Again, like, people got mad at him for saying this part. And the initial tweets, again, weren't good, but the broader explanation he actually wrote about is like, damn, has Ken Campbell kicked ass this whole time and he just had, like, the gloves on? Is that what happened?
I mean, yeah. Hey, look, sometimes he's a bit of a gamer. Sometimes you just have to say, fuck it, you know, and and go about your business. As people who've listened to this podcast for a long time know, I am always somebody who has time for Ken Campbell. I'm happy that Ken Campbell exists. I'm happy that he asks weird questions and has very odd takes. I think there's always room in hockey discourse for people like Ken, who believe their own gimmick, versus, say, like Steve Simmons, who is just disingenuous and traffics in personal attacks and things like that. I think there's a group of writers that people seem to, like, group together as being like, these are the problems with hockey writing. And Kenny's always in there, and Steve Simmons is always in there. And I think there's a difference between what, like, Ken Campbell does versus someone like Simmons. And I'll always stand for Ken Campbell. I think he's an oddball, but he's our oddball.
And also, even though it may not come across, Ken's in on the joke far more often than he's not. And I'm not sure the same can be said about some of the others.
Right. I wanted to go through these Conn Smythe winners since the 05 lockout. And we're going to play a little game here, boys, called Conn Smythe or Conn Job. We are going to reassess the MVPs. I'm going to give you who won the Conn Smythe. I'm going to give you who I think the runner-up was. You tell me if we got it right. Cam Ward, 2006 for Carolina. Sure. 920 save percentage, 2.14 goals against. Could have been Corey Stillman, 26 points in 25 games, two overtime game winners. But Cam Ward's probably your Conn Smythe and not a Conn Job, correct?
Yeah, I would think so.
I would say so, yeah. I'm good with that one.
What if we threw in Pronger in a losing effort?
When you get into losing efforts, it feels like it should either be the goalie or nobody. And, you know, like, with that, I think if you're going to say anybody in a losing effort, it should probably be Dwayne Rolison, because he's the one that got hurt mm-hmm. in game one of the cup final, and then they completely shit the bed after that. So
an excellent point.
But yeah, of course, Chris Pronger dragging many a bad team, not even bad necessarily, but many an okay team kicking and screaming to a cup final. That was kind of like the hallmark of the mid to late 2000s.
I always had time for that sort of like subversive MVP argument that the true MVP should be the player whose absence was felt the hardest by his team. And that, you know, by plucking him out of the lineup, how could you not say he's not the most valuable player?
So Mitch Marner is the Conn Smythe winner this year.
Here's the problem. Yeah, he didn't show up, but he was there.
His absence.
No, that's a good point. Yep. Least and most valuable player. Scott Niedermeyer for the Ducks in 2007. It would have been actually really interesting if Ottawa had won that series, who they would have gone with for Ottawa, because like all three of those guys in that line, the Spezza, Heatley, Alfredson line, were like great.
Yeah.
And it would have been interesting to see which one they went with. But, you know, Niedermeyer was good. He skated a bunch. I think Getzlaff had 17 and 21, three game-winning goals. Jiggy was 922, 197. But the 197 is like a team stat. They probably got it right. But the Ducks were one of those teams that was sort of a nebulous, nobody's really like the standout Conn Smythe guy teams.
Well, it's him and Pronger. Right? Like, that's pick one of them, that's the guy. Because they both played half of the game. So.
Is it possible Niedermeyer won because of his beard? Because that, like, salt and pepper bushy beard that he had was one of the more impressive playoff beards I can remember.
Yeah, I definitely think it has to do with old man Niedermeyer did it again. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
2008, Detroit Red Wings, Henrik Zetterberg, 27 points in 22 games. I did not remember him being that good offensively in that run for them. The alternative would be your old boy Chris Osgood, Ryan. 930 save percentage, 1.55 goals against average.
You would have to say he earned it, right? Like, yeah, again, like it's a bit of a Nick Lidstrom thing, but...
So you would have given it to Osgood?
I can see an argument for it, for sure.
Oh, I like it. Sean, is Chris Osgood a Hall of Famer if he has a Conn Smythe to his credit?
No, but he's got a better claim than he might otherwise have.
If you traveled back in time to 2008... and said that Marc-Andre Fleury has a better chance of being in the Hall of Fame than Chris Osgood, what would young Sean's reaction have been?
I don't think I would have been that. Like, Marc-Andre Fleury would have been, what, like 20,
kind of young,
or something back then? Like, you would have said, okay, it could go in a few. It had been a number one overall pick. Chris Osgood's was a good goaltender and was exactly the sort of good enough to win the cup sort of goalie that the Red Wings needed. I get why Detroit fans love the guy. He's not a Hall of Famer, but that doesn't mean you can't think he was a great piece of those teams.
I reclaim my time. If I had traveled back to after the Flyers-Penguins series and asked you if Marc-Andre Fleury will be a Hall of Famer, what would your reaction have been?
Yeah, that would have been a little bit... in what league would have been my answer?
Malkin in 2009, obviously a worthy Conn Smythe winner. I mean, 1.5 points per game in that run for them. Insane. Sid had 31 and 24, but Malkin was an easy call for the Conn Smythe that year.
Yeah, the other thing to say, too, is like they won the cup that year despite Marc-Andre Fleury, I believe, having a sub-900 save percentage in the playoffs.
Wow.
If I'm not, like, because there's one year he was really good and there's one year he was really bad and they had a lot of success anyway, and I'm 99% sure. I guess I could just look it up. I have fucking Hockey Reference.
I mean, you could. But. I mean, you do have the benefit of the internet. Jonathan Toews in 2010 had 29 points, rather. Not 29 goals. 29 points in 22 games. This was another one where the other Pronger year of like, he didn't have a good final, so that kind of like wiped him away for Conn Smythe, but he was insane for them the rest of the way with 18 points in 23 games as a defenseman and skated over 29 minutes a night and, like, put the Flyers on his fucking back.
Yeah, like I said, dragged a perfectly okay team kicking and screaming to a cup final where they lost in six games and, like, everybody was like, yeah, that makes sense. That's fine. Who cares?
Yeah, and the other thing was, didn't Taves also have a not very good final? At least as far as his numbers. Like, I think he had it was one of these where he had run away with it by midway through the third round. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, if Chicago wins, it's definitely going to be Taves. And then,
yeah,
it was.
I will forever say Conn Jobb on this one. I think he should have gone to Pronger. I think he had the most impressive playoff of anybody, and the Flyers wouldn't have been anywhere near the cup without
him. But I mean, it is, you're right. If this is just MVP of the playoffs, there's probably a lot of scenarios where guys on losing teams should get it. There may even be some scenarios where guys on teams that went out in the third round should get it, but that's almost never what it is. It almost always goes to someone on the winning team, unless it's just a ridiculously overpowered run on an otherwise bad team. And I wouldn't be surprised if we don't even see it again. As far as
frustrates me to see having seen a goalie from Anaheim have three good rounds and then a bad round when the Conn Smythe, but the same courtesy as an extended Pronger.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Tim Thomas, Fleury, when they won the cup, 908. But
okay, yeah, that's
the year
not good.
Before he was 933.
Yeah, 908's not good.
Yeah, at the time it was probably fine. But
Tim Thomas is one of only two names on here where I don't have an alternative. I think that I don't know if there's anybody else you could even put up to say that would have beaten Thomas for the Conn Smythe.
He was going to win even if Vancouver won Game 7.
Yep,
that was. That's the only time I've ever gone into a game seven or the end of a series and been like, a guy on the losing team is going to win even if his team loses. And obviously that as soon as they won, it was probably the most obvious pick ever. I'd be stunned if it wasn't unanimous.
Yeah. Jonathan Quick, 2012, 946 save percentage.
Yeah. I think that's going to work for you. Yeah.
Kopitar had 20-20 that postseason, but like Quick was, you know, the clear choice, I think, on that one. Man, he's one of the most complicated players, I think, that we've ever covered. In the sense of like when he was at the top of his game, I mean, it was Hasek level. Like he was, it's hard to describe to newer fans like how good Jonathan Quick was in his apex, because of how mediocre he became.
I mean, so that's the thing, right? Is like you kind of have to think about early in his career, like the Daryl Sutter, like first run Kings. The only reason they made the playoffs as the eighth seed that year was because Jonathan Quick stood on his head that entire regular season. They won so many 2-1, 3-2 games. That like to barely squeak into the playoffs, and then you know they were like the first real like Corsi, anybody can make it as an eight seed, and it's like yeah, but like they were an eight seed with like a 55% expected goal. Not expected goals wasn't even really a stat then, but like their underlying numbers were phenomenal, and all these people were like, oh, see, it just goes to show any eight seed can do it, and it's like yeah, any eight seed can do it. right. When they're taking like 56% of the shots on goal. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Quick, like I said, Quick's the only reason that team made the fucking playoffs. And then, 940 plus in the postseason. Who else is it going to be? You know?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Patrick Kane won in 2013. This was the year where I felt like Corey Crawford could have won it. But if you remember, that was also the year where Corey Crawford, there was the whole thing about like, oh, what's wrong with Corey Crawford's glove hand kind of shit in that series against the Bruins.
I remember talking to someone who had a Conn Smythe vote that year, and they were like, I don't know who I should pick. And I think it was more between Taves and Hossa, maybe, or Kane and Hossa, than Corey Crawford even getting that like initial level of consideration.
It wouldn't have been Taves, because that was the playoff, correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, where Brent Seabrook had to give Jonathan Taves the pep talk.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't playing well. You can't win the Conn Smythe if you need a pep talk.
Yeah.
Teammate.
And whoever it was, it was Kane and somebody else.
Brian Bickle year. That was the year that Brian Bickle out of his mind. And I think part of what happened was, you know, in 2010 we talked about how Taves had run away with it, but then hadn't been great in the final, and Patrick Kane had been very good in the final and scored the overtime winner. And I think a lot of people were sort of second guessing that award and going, oh, maybe it should have been Kane. And then you get to 2013 and it's like, okay, here's our make good on the guy who maybe should have got it a few years ago. We can give it to him now.
He was really good in that.
Yeah, he was.
That
sure.
playoff also. Yeah. Like it wasn't like, you know, fucking if Chris Osgood at one or whatever, you know, like he earned it.
Oh, those halcyon days when the Blackhawks were a model franchise and not complete trash. Justin Williams wins in 2014 for being Mr. Game 7. Andrei Kopitar that year had 26 and 26 and skated over 21 minutes a night.
It should have been Kopitar.
I mean,
it should have been Kopitar.
It probably should have been Kopitar. I mean, but Williams had that unstoppable Mr. Clutch narrative.
Right, yeah. That, like, the voters just decided after whatever, like, the second Game 7 winner, and everybody was like, yeah, okay, whatever. If he does it again, that's fine.
Right,
and that was also the year that Drew Doughty was playing like 30 minutes a night.
Yep,
way
yeah.
more than anyone else. He was the other one that I remember. It was a three person race, because that was my first year covering the final, and I remember like sitting at a table with like all the dudes who had votes and hearing them talk about it. And I was like, oh yeah, it's coming down to these three guys, and I think it was probably very close.
Hmm. You texted Eklund to let him know that you just heard a scoop.
Exactly.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Was Eklund even... No, I don't think he was even doing anything in 2014.
Who cares?
Speaking of skating a lot, Duncan Keith won the Conn Smythe for skating a lot the following season. That was the year when he was like skating ridiculous, like over 30 minutes a night or some such. Patrick Kane, 23 points in 23 games, 3 game winning goals. Crawford was 924 and 2.31 rather. You know, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, this really felt like they were trying to round out the trio. Nobody gets
yes,
one.
Exactly.
Which I kind of like, though. Like, yeah, that is fine. Cool that you look back and but no, I mean, when your defenseman who's playing 30 plus minutes is 2 points off of the scoring lead,
yeah. I have no problem with it.
Give it to that guy for sure.
Mm-hmm. They had no problem giving it to the same guy twice, though, in the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. Sidney Crosby pulls the Mario Lemieux winning in 2016 and 2017. 2017, Malkin had more points, but Sid played really well. And I remember watching that series and being like, logically, you can give it to Sid for all the things that he did in that series. But still fucking way Phil Kessel shouldn't have won the Conn Smythe in 2016.
2016, that's the big miss. It should have been Phil Kessel. But
again, voters just decided.
A lot of people in the media don't like Phil Kessel, so it's yeah. I mean, that's it. You put the same numbers, same performance, swap the names. I don't think there's any question who's going to win that year. So
it just really it was so frustrating because like the HBK line was just so valuable to that team.
Yeah, they were the line everybody talked about all year, to the point where they got like Shawn Michaels to go to a fucking game.
To show up, yep. Yes.
And it's, you know, it's like Phil Kessel isn't Sidney Crosby, but he's not Nick Bonino either. Like this is,
no.
They went out and made a big trade in the offseason, bring this guy in to be the final piece, and he does exactly that. Like the storyline was there, everything was there, but sometimes Phil Kessel is awkward and weird around the media and doesn't make good eye contact.
Yeah, and
so
that's the other thing too, right? Is like he didn't play on a line with Sidney Crosby. He dragged fucking Nick Bonino up and down the ice and scored all these goals. Like, come on.
Speaking of HBK, I came across an old YouTube clip of WWF wrestlers on Family Feud when Ray Combs was hosting.
Okay.
And it was faces versus heels. The captain of the face team was Randy Savage, and the captain of the heel team was Shawn Michaels. And it's a great clip. I'll share it with you guys later. But the thing I loved about it, just as a great example of Shawn Michaels' unbelievable ego, Ray Combs, the host, he's got the Intercontinental belt in front of him. And Ray Combs, the host, walks over and he's like, "Hey, what do we got here? Belt, what does it say here? Intercontinental?" And then Shawn Michaels is like, "It says heavyweight champ." And I'm just like, "Oh, you dickhead. You're not the heavyweight champ. You're the fucking IC title guy trying to put yourself over."
Good for him. Yeah, he's Shawn Michaels, right? Like, that's,
oh,
live the gimmick.
Speaking of wrestling, Ruby was away this weekend getting some beach time with her girls. So I dove headlong into Dark Side of the Ring, season 2, which I hadn't really watched. Yeah, have you seen Dark Side of the Ring, Sean?
I've never sat and watched a full episode, but I have seen bits and pieces.
Would highly recommend, for the sheer insanity of it, because admittedly, I did not know many of these stories. The episode on New Jack from ECW is fucking bonkers. It's one of those things where you watch it and you're like, I feel like I've just seen a movie, and how is there not a movie about this already? Like, his life is that insane. Like, the shit he pulled, and it's kind of like the anti-Last Dance, where New Jack would take something personally and then respond by tasering a guy until he's paralyzed and then throwing him off a scaffold during a match.
Yeah.
Like, it's fucking bonkers. Yeah, it's so good.
I recently discovered that it's all on Hulu, and I've been slowly...
Yeah, it's on Hulu.
I'm part of the way through season 1. But...
Yeah.
Yeah, the episodes I've seen so far have been really fucking good.
It's a really well-done show, and the New Jack episode is fantastic, and while difficult to watch, the two-parter on Benoit was really, really good, too, especially because it kind of gets into the hastily assembled posthumous Raw that they did, and how everybody now completely regrets going on camera and you know, lauding the life of Chris Benoit without having had all the facts come out yet.
Yeah, except for, was it Regal who went on? And
yeah, Regal was the only guy.
His interview made it very clear, in hindsight, not at the time, but in hindsight, that he had already figured out what was going on.
Yeah, and Jericho speaks of that in the piece. He's just like, I was watching at home and I saw Regals and like alarm bells are going off as far as this guy having lived in the same town as Benoit, not putting him over like everybody else was. So really good stuff. If you're a wrestling fan interested in sort of the backstory of things and the dark underbelly of sports entertainment, Dark Side of the Ring. I mean, you probably already know it, but it's great. And the new Jack episode is fucking incredible. Alex Ovechkin 2018 wins the Conn Smythe. Cousy had 32 points in 24 games that year. But it was Ovechkin's year. The only other guy I think probably could have won was Holtby. 922, 216.
Yep.
And took over the team in the first round after Grubauer crapped out.
Right. And I think that was probably why he didn't win. Well, I mean, you know, also Ovechkin is the greatest goal scorer of all time. But, you know, I think the reason he didn't win is they didn't even want him to play for them in the playoffs. And Grubauer broke their hand. Because he had been bad that year. He'd been actively quite bad, and so
and he didn't start against Columbus, right?
Like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was Grubauer. Yeah.
But then Grubauer shit the bed, and here comes Braden Holtby playing like, you know, what we think of Braden Holtby as being, and oh yeah, no, it turns out this guy is really fucking good still, and then immediately kind of reverted back to. Maybe that's not true. Maybe he had another good year, but then not so much. Like he was definitely nearing the end of the road. Let's put it that way.
I think as the giant fuck you to the establishment that was Ovechkin finally getting his cup, and you know him getting the Conn Smythe had to complete the fuck you. Like it had to be that way.
Yeah, sure.
Right. And
but he didn't. Yeah, let's not act like he didn't earn it. He scored a bunch of goals. He fucking
He was insanely good. Yeah. Yeah. The only other one I didn't have an alternative for was Ryan O'Reilly, because, like, at the end of the day, Binnington was great for them, but O'Reilly's postseason was incredible for them.
Yeah, and you know, that again, that was kind of like, oh, yeah, maybe we should have given him the MVP, too. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, he probably should have won the Hart that year. And
like, I think Binnington gets a couple of bonus points for being a rookie and playing. I mean, winning a game seven in Boston for the Cup is incredible. It's an incredible achievement. You can never take that away from Binnington, but I just feel like overall O'Reilly was the best player on that team and the heart and soul of that team in some ways too.
Yeah, the only other guy I guess you would say is maybe Petrangelo or Parayko, right? Like the mm-hmm. you know, because again, like much like the Ducks where it was like, oh yeah, we have two great defensemen and they never come off the ice. Like it was kind of like it felt like that.
Do you mean Alex Petrangelo of the National Hockey League?
The very same. I wonder, are those his real kids in that commercial, or did they like fly in somewhere?
Come on. They have to be his real kids and his real wife. Like, why else would you do the commercial? And I mean,
I don't know. They're not Marty Brodeur's kids in that Enterprise commercial.
It's never occurred to me that that wouldn't be his wife and his kids, but I mean, I just assumed it. Sean, do you have any idea what we're talking about?
No, not at all.
There's a commercial where he's, hi, I'm Alex Petrangelo of the National Hockey League. And like, he doesn't say the Vegas Golden Knights or any of that shit. And yeah. And he's just like driving his kids around. Oh, when we go to the rink or on vacation, we have this car, whatever the fuck.
The line is, we're not just a hockey family, we're a Honda family.
That's right.
Is what he says.
Yeah.
And it's a whole thing where like, they never show him in a Knights uniform. They just like show him skating, but like just his skates. His kid is watching some kind of hockey thing on an iPad, but it's a generic hockey cartoon. So the common theory is that this commercial was filmed before he signed with Vegas, which doesn't really make sense because it feels like they're driving around Vegas,
right?
Because it looks like the desert.
They're definitely in the desert for sure.
Yeah, right. But it's he goes, I'm Alex Petrangelo of the National Hockey League, and it's become like a meme here in the States because of how fucking awkward it is that there's no mention of the team he plays for in the commercial. But yeah, that's what's going on down here with commercials. What's your big commercial in Canada for the Cup playoffs?
Well, I mean, we were drowning in the Tim Hortons ad, the infamous Shea Weber first ballot Hall of Fame.
Right.
But that doesn't seem to be showing up as much. I think after me and Gentile roasted it, they just somebody stopped in it. Tim Hortons corporate headquarters pulled it. So
I feel like we are starting to get a new batch of commercials down here as well. I can't remember, but there was one extremely fucking annoying one that came on the other night, and I was like, yeah, if I had to watch this the whole fucking playoff, I might have killed myself. Like the It whatever it was, I don't even remember what it was now, but I was like, ooh, this is really fucking bad.
My favorite one was the bubble hockey one they did for Dunkin' Donuts, where it was like TJ Oshie and I think Pastrnak.
Yeah, plus the pucks in the part of the rink nobody can get to. Oh, okay, get it? Cause,
I love, that's classic bubble hockey, man, to not be able to get like, the puck in the little corner.
You know, I get the conceit, but I've also seen the commercial 600 times now, and it's like, oh, right, because the thing, yeah.
Fair enough. Victor Hedman wins last year. That seemed right, but Braden Point was also really, really good. 33 points in 23 games, but Hedman was fucking incredible. And that brings us to now. I mean, we didn't really talk about it in the first segment. What are your thoughts for Conn Smythe if everything goes the way that we believe it does in Game 5?
Vasilevsky.
Yeah, it feels like it's down to Vasilevsky and Kucherov. A point with the goal scoring streak kind of in the rearview mirror now, I think he'd have to do something pretty crazy in the final game or two or three to and Price. I think the start of the series, the first four games, takes Price out of the running as a losing goalie. Obviously, if Montreal wins, Price is going to win. But
yeah,
I think if it's Tampa, it's down to two.
Yeah, the other thing to say is I think this last game will kind of have. Like have an impact. Like if it's 5-3 and Kucherov has a couple of points, I think they give it to Kucherov. If it's 2-1 and Vasilevsky makes 32 saves or whatever, I think they give it to Vasilevsky. Like I just think giving up three goals and not winning in Montreal, like that makes it a bit of a tougher sell.
He just wasn't
I know
this
good
is like
four.
I know, yeah, he wasn't, and I know this is like difficult to quantify for and maybe not fair for Kucherov because one is a goalie and one is a winger, but like I definitely think that Vasilevskiy had a hand in more victories than Kucherov did.
Sure.
Which again, I know, goalies, whatever. But Kucherov's numbers, like I looked it up the other day. I think if you go based on like how many games that he like 20 some odd games, like his points per game average is going to go down as like one of the top 10 best ever in the playoffs.
Yeah, and the That's other hard. Thing to say is that includes a game where he only played 40 seconds or whatever it was. You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
he played that
right,
one.
Yeah.
Shit. So like, right. And like look, so I'm not saying he hasn't been fucking unbelievable, but like they. Mm-hmm. They maybe didn't have it a little bit early on, and Vasilevskiy got them through that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll put it this way. I think it's going to be Vasilevskiy. I don't think there's a bad choice between those two guys.
We've mentioned this before, I think, Barclay maybe, but I'll reiterate it.
Choice,
but. He would be Jan Ruda. Now, listen, do you think there's a chance the voters don't give it to Kucherov because of the shenanigans?
I have thought about that, yeah. I don't know that that's really his fault, but I can see them not wanting to reward that.
They shouldn't. They shouldn't. That's not their role to decide what the rules should be.
There's a lot of they shouldn'ts with awards voting, so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. But it's not, I mean, there's two layers of it. Like, first of all, the rules are what they are, and second of all, Nikita Kucherov didn't do it. If you think rules were compromised or something, be mad at Julien Brisebois. Don't be mad at Nikita
right.
Kucherov.
That's certainly why Brisebois didn't win GM of the year.
Oh yeah, fuck that. Yeah,
could be.
I mean, Joe Sakic should have won GM of the year.
Well, so. Sure, but you know, you get into the second round. That's because that's when they vote on it, right? Or is it the conference final?
No, it's the second round.
Okay,
but you know. It's Joe Sakic isn't Lou Lamoriello.
No, who? I mean, who is?
Hey, I love Lou, but you know, when you help design the financial system in the league, you tend to get some respect from the people in the league. Go figure. All right. Did you have a game show, Sean, you wanted to do?
I do. I have the game show.
Oh, Ryan does. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So,
well, that's exciting.
We mentioned a bunch of the people involved in this game show earlier in the podcast, but I was inspired this week by the Minnesota Wild signed Joel Eriksson Ek to an 8-year deal that's like a shade over $5 million. Like a good contract, you know? He's a good player. And they were like, this is the first 8-year max contract we've ever signed. As the minute, and it's like, oh, are there maybe two guys on your team that have longer contracts than that? Uh-huh. Like, notably longer? And so I went and looked it up, and there are 20 contracts in the history of the NHL that are longer than 8 years. Or at least the modern history. Like, the cap era... One of them was signed before the cap era, but and so I have put together the details of all these contracts, and I'm just going to ask Greg and Sean little trivia questions about these contracts.
These elephantine contracts, okay?
Yeah, they're huge. Who wants?
How do we win the game?
You get let's say 5 right out of 20. There are 20 total. Okay. So.
There's 20 questions? Wow.
Well, there could. I mean, there. I'm saying there are 20 total contracts.
Oh, first 1 to 5.
Yeah.
First 1 to 5. Okay.
So
thank you for not lambasting me for asking a simple question about the game's rules.
Well, this is a brand new game. If you continue to ask questions about it, again.
when you say contract, did they have to be signed or?
Yeah, that's right. Who goes
first? You can't
first?
Just change the rules because you don't like how I'm doing it. That's my one reference that I can do. That's the only one I've got. I'll go first.
Okay. Sean.
Yes.
Ilya Kovalchuk signed his 15-year contract with the New Jersey Devils. Though it got terminated famously. What age would he be when that contract ended? If it had continued?
Wow. I know it would have been over 40. It was some stupid, like, 43?
Yeah, you know what? I didn't I'll give it to you because it's 42, but I was okay. Just kind of looking for over 40. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was like very, very implausible age. Let's put it that way.
All right, Greg. We'll do it this way from now on. Before or after, greater or less than, that kind of thing. Would Rick DiPietro's 15-year contract have expired before or after 2020?
Yeah, after, I think.
Yeah, it expires this summer.
Our own Bobby Bonilla.
Yeah. It's fucking unbelievable. All right, Sean, this one is not a greater or less than. Which team signed Shea Weber to his still ongoing 14-year contract?
I mean, that was the Flyers' offer sheet that was matched by Nashville.
That's correct.
So yep. I don't know who technically signed that, but yeah,
I have the Flyers. I have it written down as Philly. I guess I would have accepted Nashville, but
I think Nashville's the real answer. Yeah.
Certainly the Flyers crafted that contract.
Yes, and Nashville just matched it. As is their right. Okay, we brought it up earlier. Greg, Ryan Suter, how long is Ryan Suter's contract?
They both signed for the same term. Yes. Was it 12 years?
Well, I was going to say, is it greater or lesser than 12 years?
Oh. Then it's, did they go 11 or they go 13? It's greater.
Yeah, it's 13. That's right.
Right.
All right, Sean. It looks like it's 2-2 right now. Sean, Zach Parise, older or younger than 25 when he signed that deal?
He was a UFA, so I think he would have had to have been older.
Yeah, he was 26. That's right. I'm not doing a good job. Ooh. You're getting too many.
No, those are. That's a good. That's a. Hey, listen. That's a good context clue. Good job out of you for that.
Duncan Keith, when he signed that deal, his AAV more or less.
How many teeth did he have when he signed that deal?
More or less than 5.5.
Fuck. I just wrote this. I think it's less.
It's more. It's 5.5.
Ah, shit.
7.4, whatever.
I couldn't remember if it was 5.3 or something. Oh, well.
Okay, Sean is in the driver's seat now. Sidney Crosby's contract. Does it end before or after 2026? I will say it was a 12-year deal when he signed it.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. A 12-year deal, and you... I don't remember when he signed it, but it must have been before the 2013 CBA, so it has to end before.
Yeah, that's right. 2025. Still fucking about 4 years left. Jeez. Crazy. Okay, Greg, Alex Ovechkin, when he signed his 13-year contract, was he older or younger than 23?
He was, what is he now, like 36? I think he was younger.
Yeah, he was 22 years old, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Sean, this is for the win, I believe.
Exciting.
Which team signed Mike Richards to his 12-year deal that famously got terminated by the Los Angeles Kings?
That was the Flyers when they signed right, him and Carter and then traded them both like a year later.
Yep, that's right. Mm-hmm. The Philadelphia Flyers did it.
Once again, when in doubt, if somebody says what team signed this ridiculous, just go contract. Flyers.
They have four of the guys on this greater than 8-year contract list. They also have Breezgalov, as you mentioned, Jeff Carter, and both Weber and Mike Richards. Wow. I can't believe that so many of them are like still ongoing. Only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them have expired to this date, or to this point. Marian Hossa is still technically under contract. Henrik Zetterberg, Alex Ovechkin, his just ended, DiPietro. So,
yeah.
But even after luckily, there's still 10 guys next season who are on these deals. Fucking crazy. Wild.
Luckily, Dry Island had a good airport for the Flyers.
Yeah. You know what I'd love to know is, like, how many of those contracts that are still active, is it the same GM? Like, I wonder if it's any of them, if any GM who signed one of these deals and took the nice low cap hit is
Stan Bowman,
still dealing
with
it.
Stan Bowman, I think, is the only one.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
That would be.
Well, and technically Poyle, if you want to say that he gets the credit for the Weber contract.
That's true. Yep. But yeah, otherwise, nobody, I don't think. I'm going down the list here.
Yeah.
Well, Bowman again with Hossa as well. So
Mike Milbury might think he's still GM of the Islanders. It's possible.
It's true.
Like GM emeritus. But all right. Well, that's a great Puck Soup, all things considered. I mean, you know, the schedule did not favorably give us a chance to break down the cup final. But we'll do it next time, in theory. Maybe they'll keep playing till August. Who knows? I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. You could read my stuff on ESPN.com. If the Lightning win, I'll have a huge column on it, and you can read it. And that's what's going on with me.
Sign up for Elite Prospects. We just put out our – again, I didn't have anything to do with it, but we just put out our draft guide, over 1,000 pages, like in-depth shit on every conceivable prospect who probably has an NHL upside, basically. Especially if you're a fan of a team who's picking high, you want to know about your options and which guy you should get mad at your GM for drafting instead of the guy you like. This is your opportunity. And if you sign up for an annual subscription with the code ILOVEEP, all one word, all caps, you get an extra 3 months tacked on to the end of your subscription. So that's going well. We recently passed 10,000 subscribers to premium, so it's going great. Get in on this while you can.
You can find me at The Athletic. You can watch me tread water as I wait for the offseason to begin. I had a post this week where I ranked the last 25 Stanley Cup winning goals from worst to best. So you can go read that and see if you agree or not. And tune in tomorrow on the Athletic Hockey Show. Me and Ian Mendez will either be reacting to the Tampa Bay Lightning being Stanley Cup champions, or we will be making weird side-eye faces about how, Montreal might actually do this. So one way or another, if you want my reaction to Game 5, check that out.
There you go. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. And obviously, when Sean gets smartened up, we'll completely break down Season 2 of I Think You Should Leave.
That's right.
In due time. Due time. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye.
See
you.
Bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.